Okay, good afternoon. Stephanie Marshall, Kitsap County Pro Tem Hearing Examiner, Department File 22-02629, appeal open record, well, not open record, de novo appeal hearing. And we were going to continue with Mr. Telligan's presentation of the appellant's case.
Thank you so much. I'd like to call Joanne Bartlett.
Okay.
We'll need to get Joanne set up. She is was just in a different part of our office, so please hold. So the earlier instruction was that she needed to raise her hand to be promoted. Is that how this works, Amanda?
If she's logged on separately as an attendee. Oh, there we go. Oh, I see. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we didn't have a separate login for witnesses, so
Okay, here we go. I was looking for the name, not the VNF. I should have realized, but she should be coming over here in just a moment. There we go.
Okay, good afternoon, Ms. Bartlett. I'm hearing examiner Stephanie Marshall. Would you please raise your right hand? And do you swear or affirm the testimony you give today is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Telligan, your witness.
Great. Let's see. Good afternoon, Ms. Bartlett. It's good to meet you. Could you begin by telling us what kind of work you did for this project?
I did the permitting reports for the various phases for Taylor Morrison.
Mm-hmm. And you work for a company called Ecological Land Services?
Yes, I do.
And what do you do for them?
I am a wetland biologist for them.
Uh-huh. Can you tell me about, give me a general overview of your education?
I have a degree in biology from Central Washington University, and I've been working in the field since 1990.
Mm-hmm. And when did you get certified to do wetland ratings?
Well, the first time we took the wetland rating training was in 2004.
Mm-hmm. And how long have you been licensed to rate wetlands? Was that in 2004?
We don't have a license to rate wetlands. We are on a list of approved wetland biologists who have taken the wetland rating training.
I see. And how long ago did you do that?
Well, the latest one was for the 2014 wetland rating form. So in November of 2014.
Okay. Do you have any degrees in soil science?
I do not.
Okay. Do you consider yourself to be a soil scientist?
No, I do not.
Okay. Have you ever testified before in an appeal hearing?
I don't recall. I may have. I don't recall.
You don't recall ever having testified?
Well, I have testified before a hearing examiner, but I don't recall it being for an appeal.
Ah, okay. Has most of your testimony been with wetland issues?
Yes.
Okay. Are you familiar with wetland P2?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Have you visited wetland P2?
I have.
Okay. When did you visit wetland P2?
I visited wetland P2, I don't remember the exact date, but October of last month, October of 2023.
Had you ever visited P2 before October of 2023?
No, I had not.
Okay. Now, in this case, I'm going to share my screen here. There was a wetland buffer reduction plan dated April 22nd, 2022, Exhibit F-19. Did you author that document, do you recall?
I did.
Okay. And then there was a September 7th wetland buffer mitigation plan. Did you author that document as well?
I did.
Okay. In both of those documents, do you recall what category wetland 2 was denoted as having?
Yeah, wetland P2 was denoted as being a category 2 with a 200-foot buffer.
Okay. And Radeke, I guess we can go through the document. Let me know if you want me to skip to one of these documents. But this document, F5, Radeke, 2007, that identified P2 as a category 2 wetland 2 as well.
That's correct, yes.
And then the 2018 Radeke Memorandum, Exhibit F9, that also categorized P2 as a category 2 wetland, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And this was back in 2007. Mm-hmm. That's roughly 14 years ago. Mm-hmm. No, 13, 16. 16 years ago. Mm-hmm. So for 16 years for this project, wetland P2 was denoted as a category 2 wetland.
Correct.
Every document you had authored up to October 2023 denoted P2 as a category 2 wetland, yes?
That's correct.
Had you, or what changed?
What do you mean? What, I'm not sure what you mean. What changed?
Why did you change your mind?
Well, in October of 2023, mm-hmm. I went out to the site and took a look at the wetland conditions and determined, it was basically determined in 2007 that it was part of a mosaic wetland with wetland L1 and L2. Mm-hmm. So I went out and recategorized it. It didn't meet the criteria for a mosaic, as part of not a mosaic wetland. So it determined it was a standalone slope wetland.
I see. So I'm going to pull up exhibit R5. This was a report you recently authored, correct?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Why were you asked to go back out in October of 2023?
Well, just to see if there would be a different category applied to wetland P2.
Did your employer or anybody associated with the development explain to you why you were going back out?
Yes.
And what was that explanation?
Just to see if it was a different category with possible different buffer and not associated with wetland L1, L2.
Have there been any strategy sessions with you beforehand to see if maybe there could be a different category applied to this wetland?
No.
No. Okay. So it says here in your report, wetland P2 was previously rated as part of L1, L2 because it was determined to meet the criteria of a mosaic. Can you tell me what a mosaic is?
A mosaic is a patch of small wetlands that are each less than 1 acre in size, are less than 100 feet apart. And when you put the line around the entire area of small wetlands, there is more than 50% coverage by wetlands in that circle.
Okay. Now I'm going to, let me see if I can pull up here. Is that concept of a mosaic, is that something that comes out of the Washington Wetland Rating Manual?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Let me just pull up here. Do you remember what page? I'm going to try and find it.
I don't recall exactly. Oh, right there.
Ah. Word search. So is this the document you were reviewing when you were thinking about whether or not P2 was a mosaic, was part of a mosaic with L2?
Yes, that's the document.
Okay. And it says here, if the wetland being categorized is in a mosaic of wetlands, the entire mosaic should be considered one unit when. Mm-hmm. And then it provides three criteria. Mm-hmm. For the first of which is each patch of wetland is less than 1 acre, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. How did you determine, or I guess, is it your position that when Radke went out in 2007 and then went back out in 2018, that Radke thought that P2 was part of a mosaic with L2?
That's what it looks like, yes.
That's what it looks like. Did Radke ever say that in any of its reports?
I believe they did mention it was a mosaic. Yes.
Okay. What? Really? Okay. So you believe you read in one of the Radke reports that P2 was part of a mosaic with L2?
That's correct. Yes.
Okay. Let's see, go back here. So this is not having to do with our discussion, by the side, pull it up. So this is an image of P2, correct, right here?
That's correct, yes.
And we're looking at exhibit F16, the stormwater plans. And this big one on the left, mm-hmm. this is L2, correct?
Correct.
And your position is that Radke thought that P2 was part of a mosaic with L2.
Yes.
But do you know what size L2 is?
I believe it's 12 acres. I can't recall exactly.
And one of the criteria for sort of lumping two wetlands together in a mosaic is that none of them can be over 1 acre in size.
That's what I read, yes. Sorry
about okay. Mm-hmm. How on earth would Radke make that mistake?
I think it was just a mistake that they made. And I mean, it's interpretation of the mosaic wording, I guess. I can't really answer. I don't know why.
Right. Mm-hmm. But in any event, their mistake was they thought L2 was less than an acre big, when in fact it was 12 acres.
I don't know that they thought that. No. I don't know that they thought about the size of the wetland.
Okay. So or either that, or they just weren't aware that the rating manual that they were using said that mosaics, everything had to be under 1 acre in order to
objection qualify. At this point, counsel is asking our witness to speculate, and he's named Braddock. He is witnesses in this proceeding. He can ask them to clarify what they were thinking at the time when they're testifying.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and sustain that. Thank okay. you.
In your professional opinion, is this would you consider this a pretty big mistake?
Not necessarily if you're misunderstanding the criteria.
Okay. Going back to your report or your exhibit that I was given, we have the mosaic language, and then you walk through the 2004 and the 2014 rating sort of requirements for mosaics. Both of which require the wetlands to be each under 1 acre in size. Mm-hmm. And you give two reasons why they're not a mosaic. Then you say, in addition to not being part of a mosaic, wetland P2 slopes down from the east and its west end, and its west end is slightly higher in elevation than L1, L2. It is separated by a low berm and culvert through the berm that leads to a level former logging road before entering wetland L1, L2. For these reasons, P2 should be considered a separate wetland system and rated as an individual wetland. Can you explain that paragraph to me? And I can go sentence by sentence, but I just wanted to understand where that's coming from.
Well, when you are considering wetlands that are connected or considered one system for terms of rating, one of the criteria is that there be level areas of water on both sides of, let's just say we've got two wetlands we've got wetlands on both sides of a road. If there right. a culvert under the road is the water level on both sides of the road through the culvert is the same, they're considered the same wetland. But if you have a wetland that is a slope like wetland P2, you have it's sloping down, the water's going down towards wetland L1 and L2, and which prevents water from getting back in, or wetland L1 and L2 sharing water with wetland P2. So there's no sharing of water, so they would not be considered the same wetland.
Okay. And then your thoughts on that point in me trying to reverse engineer it, as it were. I was looking through the 2004 rating manual again, and I see this section called Wetlands Bisected by Human-Made Features.
Mm-hmm.
And that talks about when a wetland is divided by a human-made feature, such as a road embankment, the wetland should not be divided into different units if there's a level, the underlying level, surface water connection between the two parts of the wetland, and water should be able to flow equally well between the two areas. Is that what you were thinking of?
Yes, that's what I was talking about, yes.
Okay. So in your conception of P2 and L2, it seems like both the mosaic concept of them, you know, that the mosaic idea as being first reason why they aren't sort of lumped together for purposes of rating. And the second one, the sort of level surface water, both of those come out of the rating manual?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Was there anything else you consulted to draw those conclusions?
Nope. Just the rating, wetland rating.
Just the manual.
Right.
Okay. So it's not level, but is there a surface water connection between the two, even if it's running?
No, there doesn't seem to be, no.
Okay. And why do you say there doesn't seem to be?
Well, there was no water in the wetland P2 when I was out there. It's also a slope wetland, so you wouldn't see water flowing over the surface. And but I was able to see a little bit of evidence of water in wetland L2, and there was a clear disruption in that water by the old road.
Mm-hmm. I'm in this document now. I'm going to go back to exhibit R5. This was your report that you submitted most recently. This is, I'm looking at it's figure one.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like you have P2 and then you have P2 on the right, L2 on the left. You have a pink dashed line.
Mm-hmm.
And that, what does the pink dashed line represent?
I believe it's the low berm that was there.
Okay. So there's a berm dividing these two wetlands.
Yeah, looked like there had been a berm on the uphill side of the road, yes.
Okay. And then there's an existing logging road that bisects them.
Correct.
What were conditions like on that logging road? Is that like a road that I could like drive my sedan on?
Oh, no. It's just a trail.
Just a trail. So was it bare earth?
I don't remember for sure. It seems like it might've been bare. Yes.
Do you know if there was vegetation growing on it?
It looked like there had been a bit of vegetation growing on it because it wasn't regular. It's not regularly used, but it's definitely an old logging road.
Uh-huh. Do you remember what kind of vegetation?
Just, you know, your usual upland plants, salmonberry and sword fern and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. And then you can't really see it very well on this diagram. There was a culvert down there.
Yes.
And am I reading this correct that the culvert just goes through the berm and then daylights onto the road?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. Are there any other culverts in P2?
Nope.
Okay. How about downstream from this point of L2 to Crabapple Creek?
I didn't go down there to look for a culvert or anything.
Okay. And here we have the cross section
mm-hmm.
That you prepared.
Right.
Why does it say draft?
Just because I sent it as a draft and the draft stamp was never removed.
Okay. And so here we have, is this an accurate representation of the shape of the berm?
Basically, yes.
So it's triangular?
Well, it was, I don't know if it was exactly triangular, but it was in that position.
Okay.
Yeah. It might have had a rounded top. I don't remember.
Okay. And then the culvert looks like it's approximately 5-6 feet long.
Yes, it's not. Yes.
Okay. And then this area with the road, mm-hmm. There was some upland vegetation, but you don't recall if there was a trail.
It looked like an overgrown trail. It wasn't bare earth or, you know, didn't look like a road.
Right.
That you can drive on, I should say.
And you said it had salmonberry?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Is that an upland or is that an upland species?
That is a plant that grows equally in wetlands and uplands.
Is there a scientific name for that or an acronym? I know there's like FAC, FACU. I honestly don't know what they mean. Mm-hmm. But is there an acronym for that kind that can grow equally well in both?
That's facultative. Yes, FAC.
Facultative.
Mm-hmm.
And so facultative, calling them upland plants, is that an accurate description?
It would be if it's growing with other upland plants, such as sword fern and trailing blackberry and that kind of facultative upland plant species.
Okay. Bear with me one second here.
Mm-hmm.
So, oh, actually, 7:30. Let me see if I can go back here. I'm going to go back to the these are the foundational documents.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go to page 737 and hope it's right. Here we go. So this is from exhibit E. Well, it's hard to tell. I'm sorry, F9,
mm-hmm.
Page 11 within that document. And it shows P2 and L2. And if you zoom in,
mm-hmm.
it shows a culvert actually connecting those two wetlands.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not what you saw?
It isn't what I saw, no.
Okay. Do you know if anybody's changed that culvert?
Doesn't look like it.
Okay. So Radicke got the culvert wrong.
I can't say that they got it wrong because it was done in 2007 and conditions can change within a wetland. Especially if there's a change in hydrology from another development upslope.
Okay. So tell me about that. So the wetland hydrology can change?
Yes.
How so?
Well, you could have more wells being drilled upslope on the adjacent development, or you could have less rainfall occurring in a certain period of time. And you have to keep in mind when we delineate wetlands, it's what we see at the time. And sure. Sometimes it's not, you know, you have water there, but it may not be wetland, exactly wetland, because we are not able to examine all of the other parameters. So that could be a reason. It just wetlands change over time, vegetationally, hydrology, you know, with the hydrology and that kind of thing. So, I mean, it could be expected to change.
Okay.
Especially over since 2007.
Sure. I believe this is from 2018.
Well, it could be also from, I'm not sure if this was also occurring in 2007.
Okay, fair enough. Now, wetlands, I guess so 2018 was, say, 5 years ago,
mm-hmm.
right? Is it possible for wetlands to shrink in that time?
Sure. It is possible.
Is it possible for wetlands to expand in that time?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Okay. When you went out to look at P2 in October 2023, did you delineate that wetland?
I did not flag it, no.
Okay, you did not flag it. Did you delineate any portion of wetland L2?
I did not.
Okay. Did you, go back to R5, in this area
mm-hmm.
where the road is, did you perform any test pits or anything like that to determine if that area had hydric soils or wetland hydrology or anything like that?
I did do a test pit there, yes.
In the road itself?
The road, right. Yeah, below the culvert. Mm-hmm.
Is that in the record?
It is not in the record. I was just providing this information at the time, and I hadn't been asked to do, I wasn't ready to do anything formal with it. But it can be added to a report.
Okay. And what was your determination for that area?
That it was not wetland.
Okay. Do you know if P2 and L2 were connected at any point in the past?
I can't say.
Have you investigated that?
No, I don't. I don't think historical records can show that in what's available to us now. Uh-huh. I just don't see how I could ever say they were connected.
Is it possible, looking at the geography, the slopes, that sort of thing, is it possible to offer a scientifically educated opinion on that?
No, I don't think I could. I wouldn't even want to guess. It's, you know.
Okay. I'd like to shift and talk about wetlands Q1, Q2, and 301.
Mm-hmm.
These were wetlands that were identified by Radke in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
Q2 and Q1 were identified by Radke in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
But then you went out and you determined those wetlands no longer existed.
Correct.
Okay. Can you walk me through that process, how you determined that they no longer exist?
I went to the site and dug a series of test pits in the areas identified as those three wetlands.
Mm-hmm.
And determined that the hydric soil criteria was not met.
Okay. Just give me one second here. Sorry, I had a notation here, but it must not have been. There it is. So this is one of your test pits. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna go up. I have to scroll. Pardon my scrolling. There's a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
But this was a map that you provided. This is Exhibit F18, page 23.
Mm-hmm.
And here's wetland Q2. It's this long linear feature right here.
Mm-hmm.
And test pit 11 is right in the middle of that wetland. Do you see that?
Mm-hmm.
10-20. So here is your data sheet for test pit 11. Do you see that?
Yes.
And please ask me if you will. This looks pretty big on my screen, but let me know if you have a heart.
It's good. Yeah.
Okay. So it looks like you went out and sampled this test pit, correct? Jay Bartlett? Correct.
Yes.
Okay. And on this particular one, you found hydrophytic vegetation present.
Correct.
You found wetland hydrology present.
Yes.
You did not find hydric soils present.
Correct.
Okay. So I'm going to go down, as I understand these, you know, it looks like you have boxes for vegetation, soils, hydrology.
Mm-hmm.
So vegetation, you found that was present. I want to look at the soils.
Yep.
10, well, first, can you explain to me what these things mean? You know, instead of me asking you point by point, can you tell me like what these numbers and letters mean generally?
It's hard to describe without a picture of a page from the Munsell color book, but the 10YR is a page in our Munsell color book that we compare the soil with. And then on each page, there is a series of, like, we call them paint chips, documenting different soil colors with, they have holes behind them so you can take your soil sample and compare it with whatever paint chip it matches. So the 10YR 3/2 would be the 10YR page with a chroma. I never get these right. A hue of 3 and a chroma of 2. I believe that's right.
Can you tell me what color that is, generally speaking?
It's generally a dark brown.
Okay. And then below that, you have 10YR43.
Correct.
And is that also generally brown?
It's a little bit more yellow.
A little bit more yellow.
Mm-hmm. YR stands for yellow red.
Ah, right. Yeah, it's just that the other one had yellow red. I didn't know. And then you have percentages. What do those refer to?
Those are the percentage, what percentage of the soil layer is covered with that particular color.
Okay. And then what about this one? Color, it says color moist, 10YR46. And then
that is redoxymorphic concentration in the pore linings. That's what the C and the PL mean. And that color is what we used to refer to them as mottles. So now they're called redoxymorphic concentrations.
Okay. What is a redoxymorphic feature, redoxymorphic concentration?
It's a color change within the matrix color that indicates a level of potential water, groundwater moving up and down in the soil.
Right. Is it kind of like variation in the color?
It's not a variation. It's just sort of little spots.
Little spots. Mm-hmm. Okay. And that indicates the presence of water?
It can, but you know, there are other reasons for them to have it. Sometimes they're oxygenated portions of the soil, but generally that's what we put down, is that it is a mottle.
Okay. What are these other things down here? Hydric soil indicators.
Those are what we take the soil profile that we have listed above, and we compare it with we have a little book of hydric soil indicators, and we match it up with that. If they don't meet any of those, we don't mark any, and it's considered not hydric.
Okay. How do you check for these things?
Well, it's basically your soil profile that we've typed up above.
Okay. So you could just look at those numbers and tell if these things are present.
Correct.
Okay. And if we go down to hydrology, you said there was a high water table.
Mm-hmm.
Did you check for any of these other features?
Well, those are, we're supposed to check all that applies. So if there's only one check, that's all I saw.
Okay. Iron deposits. How do you check for iron deposits?
That would be similar to a redoxymorphic concentration.
Just color.
Right.
Okay. Surface soil cracks.
Mm-hmm.
How do you check for that?
Just looking at the ground and see if there are any there.
When you went there, were there leaves on the ground?
Probably. I don't remember.
So did you brush them aside?
Sure. Yeah, that's what part of our process.
Okay. Hydrogen sulfide odor.
Mm-hmm.
How do you check for that?
Well, if a soil smells like rotten eggs, it has that indicator.
Mm-hmm. And so do you pick it up and smell it?
No, it usually just comes right out of the hole when you put your shovel in.
So it's a strong smell?
Yes.
Okay. Oxidized rhizospheres along living roots. How do you check for that?
Well, you look at the soil sample that you have taken from your hole, and you see if you can see any little color changes along living roots within the soil.
And did you find living roots in the soil?
Yes, found living roots, yes.
Okay.
But no oxidized rhizospheres.
Okay. Presence of reduced iron. How do you check for that?
That's the same basic thing as a redoxymorphic concentration.
Okay. Recent iron reduction. Oh, actually, this is tilled soils. Yeah. How about stunted or stressed plants? Did you see any of those?
Nope.
Okay. So do you have any opinion on whether or not this particular test that was for Q2, did you have any opinion on whether or not these were wetlands when Ready Key went out 4 years earlier or 5 years earlier in 2018?
I can't, I don't know. I didn't, I wasn't out there then. I don't know. All I'm just going by what I saw when I was there.
Okay. Do I have any more questions here? Thank you so much, Ms. Bartlett. I have no further questions.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Bartlett. Any questions from the applicant's attorney or from the county's attorney? I know that Ms. Bartlett's on other witness lists. Would you like to ask questions now or wait
just
until?
Sorry, David, go ahead.
Oh, no. Yeah, I was done.
David, did you want to go first or do you have any?
I could ask a couple now while they're fresh in my mind and then without precluding the opportunity to recall. So Ms. Bartlett, regarding the wetlands Q2, you'd mentioned that it no longer met the all three criteria because it no longer met the hydric soils. Is that right? But it didn't meet the other two.
Yes.
What about Q1? Was that the same or was it lacking one of the other criteria?
I don't recall without looking at a data form, but I believe it would have at least not met the hydric soil criteria.
Okay. Because I thought when I'd read those that it was wetland hydrology that was missing, but
I don't remember. I'd have to look at it.
And do you recall with the area between P2 and I think it's L2 where the road is? Mm-hmm. You said you took a sample, but what about the hydrophytic plants or the wetland hydrology, were all three missing or just one was missing?
I believe at least the hydric soil and the wetland hydrology criterion were missing.
Okay. I don't have anything else for right now.
Okay. Thank you. I don't know how to say your last name. Is it Liao?
Liao.
Okay. Ms. Liao.
Yeah. Thank you. I just have a couple of questions and I will and do intend to recall Ms. Bartlett later. Ms. Bartlett, is it typical for jurisdictions under the critical area ordinance to require reevaluation of wetlands every few years?
Yes, it is.
Do you know what is the specific timeframe in which they typically require that reevaluation?
It varies for different jurisdictions, but it's generally 3 to 5 years.
Do you know why that is?
Because wetlands can change over time due to changes in hydrology or other factors.
Thank you. Either before or after this appeal was filed, did you speak to Steve Heacock, who we heard from earlier this morning, about the categorization of wetland P2?
Yes.
Did he suggest to you that might need to be relooked at?
He did, yes.
And why did he suggest that might need to be relooked at?
He was, I'm not sure, other than he thought maybe it wasn't connected to L1, L2 as shown or as rated.
Thank you. I want to ask a clarifying question of you, and then I can let appellant's counsel chime in as well. The appellant's appeal statement references wetland 301. Mm-hmm. I believe, though, the testimony that you have just been providing is in connection with wetland 302. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
Okay.
It's a typo.
Mm-hmm. And you think it's a typo on their part or your part?
I think it was a typo in my report.
Let's get some clarification on this because I actually want to make sure that we're all talking about the right wetland here. Okay. I think I have here. This is difficult, but I've been trying to find a better report. So I'm going to share screen on exhibit F5, which is Radicke's report, because that's the place I know where to find those two wetlands on the same document. So let me see if this works. Okay. Okay, so this is F5, which is Radicke's 2007 report. This is figure four. And this is very difficult for the hearing examiners if you haven't reviewed this yet, because it is tilted with north up. So we've been looking at things with, north to the left. So yes, we've been looking at things with north to the up, right? So let me see if I can identify here on this, because it always takes me a minute as well. So we have just heard you provide some testimony about wetland Q1. Is that correct, Joanne?
That's correct, yes.
And wetland Q2, is that correct?
Yes.
And I'm noticing wetland 302 is in the vicinity of Q1 and Q2. Is that the wetland for which you went out and evaluated on site?
Yes, it is.
Okay. And wetland 301, that is, it would be further east on the site, close right to this wetland O. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
So to the extent that at least the questions pertaining to Q1, Q2, and 301, I'll let applicants count. This is where applicants council may need to correct this. At least you haven't done an evaluation, an on-site evaluation of wetland 301. Is that correct?
I have not.
Okay, thank you. And I'll stop sharing. Oh, last question for you. In going on site to evaluate wetland Q1, Q2, and 302, yeah, I'm going to get this right now. we may have heard testimony earlier from Steve Heacock about being on site to evaluate that. Do you recall if anyone else went on site with you when you were doing those evaluations of Q1, Q2, 302?
I don't recall.
Okay, fair enough. All right. No further questions at this time. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Telligan, do you have any redirect of this witness?
Yeah. So it was Mr. Heacock that asked you to go out and reevaluate wetland P2?
He did not ask me. He was thinking it should be considered, but he didn't ask me to, no.
Okay, and it was because he thought they were not connected?
That's, I believe so. I really can't speak to what he really thought, but.
And that was something he said directly to you?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you know if that was before? Was that before or after this appeal was filed?
It was before.
Before. Okay. And so when you were out there shifting to when you were out there with Steve Heacock on wetland Q2, you don't remember anybody else being present. Do you remember a determination being made? He relayed earlier that it was that the wetland Q2 had been made by, I think it was in the early 1900s, from logging and dragging those big trees out of there. Do you recall that conclusion having been made?
I didn't on that specific one, but I have heard that about that from him before on the Arborwood site, yes.
Yeah, that it was basically, you know, logging old growth timber, dragging into the mud.
That does happen, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But
I don't recall it being mentioned when we were out there.
All right. Thank you so much. That's it. Oh, I think you're muted, Madam Examiner.
My apologies. You know, multitasking. Thank you. And thank you, Ms. Bartlett, for your testimony. Mr. Telligan, you may call your next witness, please.
Sure. It's Telligan.
I'm messing up everybody's names.
Okay. Sure.
Mr. Telligan.
I call Rob Rosine.
Hey.
He should be in the attendees. Yep.
Okay. All right. Good evening.
Hello. Hello. I'm going to swear you in real quick, and then we can start. We can have Mr. Telligan start questioning you. And I said that correctly, right? It's not hard G, it's a soft G, right?
Soft G, yes. Thank you so much.
Great.
I'm not going to help you with my name. I'm going to just let you figure it out.
Rosine, I heard it.
Oh, you got it.
I'll get there. All right, please raise your right hand. Do you swear from the testimony you give today is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Okay, thank you. You may proceed.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Dr. Rosine. Could you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do for a living?
Yeah. Good evening, Mr. Examiner, members here. My name is Robert Rosine. I have a doctorate in civil engineering with a specialty in water resources engineering. I'm a licensed professional engineer in Massachusetts, Maine, and New Hampshire. I practice throughout the country. I work. I have a diplomat. I'm a licensed diplomat in water resources engineering. That's given out by the American Academy of Water Resources Engineers. It's the highest certification offered to engineers. There's kind of a select group amongst engineers around the country, and it's intended to demonstrate a higher level of understanding. And my particular area of expertise in there is water quality and low impact development. So a little bit on my background. I was the director of the University of New Hampshire Stormwater Center for about a dozen years, faculty in the Department of Civil Engineering at UNH, and then been in private practice since 2012. And I do a lot of this type of work, both on the appellant and the defense side. So both expert witness as well as I'm a practicing design engineer. So I work on a lot of project teams, both on the development and permitting side. Work with state and federal authorities. Have helped draft permits again at the state and federal level, even. And have practiced in the Northwest quite a bit. I'm actually from the Northwest originally, but have worked actually for the Department of Ecology. In their TAPE program, the Technology Assessment Protocol, is on the Board of External Reviewers back in, I think that was 2011. And the Stormwater Center, which I started and designed, was actually the model for the Washington State Stormwater Center. So I consulted with folks who were originally involved in that design. So.
Can I ask, because we don't have any documentation with a CV or anything, can we have the witness slow down? I can't keep up.
Yes, absolutely. Dr. Rosine, if you don't mind, I understand that we're all, myself included, taking copious notes quickly. If you could just slow a little bit.
I'm happy to, sorry.
And please, if anyone is trying to keep up, feel free to raise your hand and happy to have the witness repeat some of what he was just explaining as far as his background, training, and experience in education.
Well, let's step back and maybe we can go through these a couple pieces at a time. First of all, you have a PhD in civil water resources engineering, correct?
That's correct.
Can you tell me about your dissertation topic?
My dissertation topic was on shallow groundwater interactions, primarily nutrient loading as it relates to septic systems and surficial infiltration. So one of the sort of the nexus here between stormwater and wastewater, low impact development, infiltration systems is the shallow groundwater connections that we talk about a lot. It's important. You know, for a septic system, you don't want side of the wall to blow out. It's important for an infiltration system that you don't want a slope failure, say for a permeable pavement or some other infiltration style system. And it was shallow groundwater and nutrient loading as it relates to that.
I see. In addition to having a PhD, do you have any other degrees?
I do. I have a master's in environmental science and engineering. Of which wetlands was a large portion of that, and so particularly wetland biogeochemistry. So while I'm not a professional wetland scientist, in the world of academics, we get a little bit of alphabet soup behind our names. I could go after the PWS certification, but I just haven't bothered. I have a lot of wetland training, soils, biogeochemistry, plants, a lot of that.
Okay. And you mentioned something called a Diplomat of Water Resources Engineering Certification. What is that?
Yeah. It's a DWRE, and it's given out by the American Academy of Water Resources Engineers. And they require a test for that. It's mostly like a defense, similar to like your dissertation defense for achieving a doctorate. And you, it's been so long, I don't even remember what we were, what that was about, but it was, I hardly recall. I remember being grilled by 10 people for a lot of hours. It was just on that, which I study, which is low impact development, and BMP, our system, performance in particular, which at the time, as I said, I was the director of the UNH Stormwater Center. And one of the big pieces that we did with that was design, testing, verification, calibration of an advancement of stormwater management systems.
Okay.
And that's the Board of External Reviewers for TAPE, which is another one of these endless acronyms, but that was for the Department of Ecology. It still exists. And it's called the Technology Assessment Protocol-Ecology. And it's the process by which the state of Washington approves manufactured treatment devices. So they have a board of external reviewers from around the country, just experts in this stuff, who then review studies that are submitted and then use that information for, it goes onto an approved list for use in stormwater management.
Okay. And you are a registered professional engineer in New Hampshire, Maine, and Massachusetts, correct?
Yeah. Just a moment. Sorry, I got a dog going a little nuts here. Yes.
Okay. Now, in your private practice, do you help people get stormwater permits?
I do. Yeah. So I work on all sides. I do a lot of commercial and private development. Usually I'm brought in for the hard to permit projects and the projects that require high-end stormwater management and permitting. I also work a lot on the advocacy side in positions like this as an expert witness, as I said, both sides, but also a lot on the regulatory front. So I do a lot of nutrient control planning around the country, Chesapeake Bay, New England. I've reviewed the Washington State draft MS4 permit, I think is what it was called. I was commenting on that. A lot of different places like that.
And in your work in looking at stormwater, do you have to review impacts on what we call out here in Washington, critical areas, streams, wetlands, that sort of thing?
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. From a water quality perspective?
Sure, water quality and a lot more. So water quality, water quantity, it could be design element, it could be construction. I teach courses for ASCE, American Society of Civil Engineering, on low impact development and design and permeable pavements, a bunch of these other things. So I'll be brought in often to comment on designs whether it's on the design in the permitting side, or sometimes it's on the failure side, where what particular problems are we dealing with and what are potential causes?
Sure. In this case, have you reviewed the proposed stormwater plans for this project?
I have, yes.
Okay, I'm gonna pull those up. Can you see my screen?
Before we get into substantive testimony at this case, I do want the opportunity to ask some questions of this witness so we can get the scope of what he's being qualified as an expert for.
Yes. And we did briefly address that. So, I believe that Mr. Telegin is amenable to voir dire. So I will allow some follow-up questions from Ms. Liao.
Great, thank you. This will take me a moment to review my notes. Let's see. You mentioned some of the certifications that you have. You mentioned that you're licensed in Massachusetts, Maine, and New Hampshire. Are you licensed in Washington State?
I am not.
Is there any reciprocity in that licensing between those states?
There is, yeah.
Have you applied for that reciprocity?
No, because I have not done any design in Washington State. If I were stamping plans in Washington State, I would. And that's the majority of the design work I do is all in New England. But it would certainly be something that I would be eligible for and something that would be possible.
But you've never designed any stormwater systems or plans or drawings in Washington that are applicable in Washington state. Is that correct?
Well, there's different parts to what you said. If I never designed anything in Washington state, correct. That would be applicable in Washington state. No, there are lots of everything that I've designed is generally applicable in Washington state.
And how do you know that what you've designed would be applicable in Washington state? Are you licensed here? That's where I guess I'm going to get.
Right. And that's because I'm quite familiar with the rules in Washington state. I do a lot of review in the city of Seattle and elsewhere. So I'm confident that if I was asked to design something in the state of Washington, that there would be no issue at all, aside from the reciprocity, which would be necessary.
But you've only reviewed those plans in Washington state. You've never designed plans that are subject to Washington stormwater regulations. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Where do you presently work?
Waterstone Engineering.
And what is your role there?
I'm the owner.
And apologies if you mentioned this before. I guess you mentioned you were faculty at a couple of different centers for UNH. Other than having this consulting firm that you work for and this UNH, have you worked anywhere in between?
I have, yeah. Yeah. So I worked at UNH until 2012 as faculty in civil engineering and the director of the UNH Stormwater Center. After that, I went and worked for Geosyntec Consultants I can't remember exactly how long, but maybe 4 years. Did a bunch of work actually in the Northwest as part of that, some work for Seattle Public Utilities and others. And then after that worked for the Horsley Witten Group, group also out of Massachusetts for about a year, and then went into private practice after that.
So have you ever reviewed any proposed stormwater plans or designs in Kitsap County before this case?
I'm not sure. I think I possibly have. I'm not entirely sure. It's a good question. I'm not entirely sure. I've done work on the peninsula. My mom was born in Port Townsend, Port Orchard. Does that count?
It does not. So
no. Okay.
When you say that you review, what are you, when you've reviewed projects in Washington state, like I think you mentioned Seattle Public Utilities, what have you reviewed? Can you be more specific about the types of stormwater plans or designs you've reviewed? Like, for example, have you reviewed stormwater management plans proposed for preliminary plats of this scale in Washington state?
I have, yeah.
Under what stormwater manual were you reviewing that under? Have you reviewed under, I should say, in general?
I couldn't tell off the top of my head, but I know that I've reviewed them in the city of Seattle. I know I've reviewed them in a couple of other projects with, frankly, I can't remember where exactly they were. I do a lot of reviews. But if you wanted an exhaustive list, that's absolutely something I could provide. But off the top of my head, I can't remember.
No, I'm trying to let me ask a more pointed question. Have you, prior to this case, reviewed stormwater plans either under the 1997 Kitsap County Stormwater Design Manual or under the 1992 Washington Western Washington Ecology Stormwater Manual?
I think the answer is yes, but I, as I said, I would have to go back and check and see where what particular set of regulations was applying for those particular projects, which I don't remember at the time.
Are you able to review those plans with authority if you're not licensed in Washington?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. There's no limitation as far as opining, as long the limitation is really with respect to design. I'm not required to stamp a document unless I'm actually designing it. You know, certainly it carries more weight if I have license in that state. But as I said, there would be, I would imagine there would be zero issue of reciprocity from state to state.
You mentioned your expertise is in low impact development. Do you review projects more broadly? Again, just to be clear, you know, preliminary plat that presents a stormwater plan, whether or not it includes low impact development design. Do you review those for approval as a reviewing agency? on behalf of reviewing agencies?
I have. I've been periodically hired by towns or municipalities or developers to review various projects. Again, sometimes it's on the applicant side, sometimes it's on the permittee side. Permitter side. Make recommendations, identify limitations, et cetera. Typical review stuff.
In Western Washington, on behalf of a permitting agency, have you been asked to review stormwater plans for approval?
I have not. For a permitting agency, I have not.
Okay. So the work that you've been doing in Washington State, has that been for, in what context have you been reviewing plans in Washington State that you've referenced before?
In plans, I would say it's been on the appellant side. Is that right? They all been on the appellant side? I think they've all been on the appellant side. That's right. It's been on the appellant side. I've worked for Seattle Public Utilities in doing an analysis for them on bioretention system performance on a national scale to make recommendations for how to improve bioretention systems.
So is it fair to say that in Washington State, your only experience in reviewing stormwater, proposed stormwater designs and plans for purposes of permit approvals is on behalf of appellants who are challenging those projects?
Yes.
Okay. Have you ever testified as the witness in a Washington State proceeding?
Yes.
What was the nature of that case?
Oh, let's see. That would have been the Zimmerli gravel mine in Vancouver, Washington.
What was the subject matter in which you provided that testimony?
Stormwater management, runoff, propensity for flooding and water quality, stormwater violations, sufficiency of design. What else? Risk to habitat. Modeling.
I'd like to ask you about your experience with wetlands. You mentioned earlier before, you said you're not a professional wetland scientist. Have you ever performed a wetland delineation?
No, because you need to be a licensed, because you need a license for that. But
what has been your involvement in any way, shape, or form in reviewing wetland delineations?
I know lots about it. I review wetland delineations as a matter of routine for my work. I hire wetland scientists often.
So is it in a supervisory role? Are you evaluating for compliance?
Evaluation, yeah. No, not supervisory.
Compliance with applicable regulations in terms of what whether or not a wetland should be determined to be a wetland?
Yeah.
Okay. So you've never performed a wetland delineation, but you review wetland delineations for purposes of compliance with applicable regulations.
Well, let's be precise here. So have I ever performed a wetland delineation? Have I stamped and presented something as an official wetland delineation? No, because that would be beyond my my purview. Am I familiar with all the aspects of wetland delineation? Yes. Do I commonly review wetland delineations for substantive reasons? Mostly that is with respect to civil site development, all the same issues that we're talking about here. And so that is really almost a matter of routine with my work.
Do you feel like you're in a position to disagree with the wetland delineation performed by a person who has a certification to perform wetland delineations based on your professional experience?
Can you repeat that question, please?
Yeah. Do you think that based on your professional experiences, you're in a position where you could object to or challenge a wetland delineation that's been performed by a licensed wetland consultant. I'm just trying to get a sense of here of what you're going to be providing testimony here for and whether you're qualified to do that.
Well, I think in it, so the answer to that is it depends on the state. But in Washington, yes, because, well, I'm not on the list of people who have taken the training. Washington State also does not have a licensure process, whereas there are a couple of designations, PWS, professional wetland scientists. There's another one, CWP, certified wetland professional. As I said, I'm fairly sure I haven't done it because it's not really necessary for what I'm doing, that I would be eligible for all of those.
But you don't any of those certifications. Is that correct? That you just listed for Washington State. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And have you done any review of wetland determinations before this appeal in Washington State?
Oh, yeah. As I said, I do that basically daily. I mean, I do that in my work almost weekly. I mean,
it's in Washington State?
No, not in Washington State. Rhodoxymorphic conditions, hydrology, and vegetation. Those three items, the wetland delineation process is a 404. I think it's a 404 B process. It's an Army Corps of Engineers. It's the same process. What differs is vegetation, maybe specific to a particular region. Yes, I'm familiar with that.
So you're familiar with it. You say on a daily basis, what are you reviewing? I'm sorry, I'm still lost because now you're talking about wetland 404 permits.
So the process of wetland delineation is one that's outlined by the Army Corps. And so that's not a Washington state specific process. Hydrology, soils, and vegetation is outlined by the Corps of Engineers. It's a federal jurisdiction that then passes down to state jurisdiction, and then the state is then able to expand on all of that. To restate where my position is, I routinely review wetland delineations, whatever that might be, whether it's the soils or the hydrology or the plants, for my work. It's not the exact focus of my work, or if it was, I would in fact have that designation. But because I do stormwater design, all those elements are very closely related. Let me give you an example. I cannot put a bioretention system in a wetland. So understanding wetland hydrology and soils is really important. I also cannot build something where I have where I'm within the realm of seasonal high groundwater, which is the whole aspect of rhodoxymorphic soils that we talked about earlier. There are separations required from seasonal high groundwater. These are the exact same things that are in wetland delineations. So these are features that I work with routinely.
Okay. Are you familiar with the National Technical Committee on Hydric Soil Criteria?
Not off the top of my head.
Okay. So let's see. A few more questions for you here. And I'm sorry, you say you routinely review those determinations in the design process, not necessarily the determination of whether or not those are wetlands are accurately delineated or consistent with local criteria, specifically here in Washington.
Well, multiple questions in there. So specifically here in Washington, no. The other part, yes, routinely.
You routinely review whether or not there are those delineations have been accurately determined, and under what are you doing that as a in terms of reviewing for a private applicant or as an agency reviewer?
So probably not as an agency reviewer, but I would say I would be doing that sometimes as an applicant and sometimes as an advocate. Classic example would be, wetland delineation is a bit of a game. We all know it. The wetland delineators that want to work for developers are not going to do hard wetland delineations. So, the ones that are hired are the ones that give the big go pass. So when you're hired by an advocate, what needs to be done often is to give it a good look and say, is there reason for challenging this? And on occasion there is, on occasion there is not. A third party wetland delineation is something. It's a tool that's at the disposal of some advocates that would be potentially fighting a particular project. And so one way that you might assess that would be that, what does this look like? Does this look like they've drawn the line 20 feet, or 100 feet beyond where somebody else might delineate that. So that's the type of situation that I find myself reviewing commonly.
So how are you able to determine whether or not the wetland delineation has been accurately determined?
Maybe I could clarify, Mr. Rosine is not here to talk about the wetland delineation.
Okay, thank you. So you're stipulating that he is not being qualified as an expert on the topic of wetland delineations or wetland categorization and any of the issues identified in this appeal, is that correct?
No, he's not here to talk about the delineation. He's here to talk about stormwater and the impacts on the wetland.
Okay. Let me ask some clarifying questions on that then. In terms of stormwater impacts to wetlands, can you describe what your work in that arena under Washington Critical Area Regulations?
Can you be more specific? Each jurisdiction has a different critical area.
Sure. Regulation. Kitsap County Critical Area Ordinance. Can you describe your experience under the Kitsap County Critical Area Ordinance for purposes of evaluating stormwater impacts to wetland buffers?
I'm not sure I have anything to add to that. I've reviewed, am I even reviewing the wetland regs here? All I've looked at this stage is wetland stormwater impacts as it relates to wetland water quality or wetland quality. With respect to this critical area determination, yeah, I don't have a whole lot to add to that. That's not something I'm terribly familiar with.
So in terms of that evaluation, what are you referring to in terms of stormwater quality? Are you referring to specific regulations?
I'm talking to the testimony that I'm going to be giving in a little while.
Right.
Okay. That we haven't talked about yet.
Okay. Okay. Have you prepared a report for this case?
I have not.
Have you prepared any notes that you'll be referencing during this testimony?
No.
All right. Give me just a moment. Sorry. Can you just... one moment, please. I think, I apologize if I asked this earlier. And you earlier testified, I think, to your experience with Western Washington stormwater regulations. Did I ask you that already? Yeah, I think I did.
Yep.
All right. I think you may have mentioned that you referenced some of the materials in this case. Have you referenced the code, the stormwater codes or the critical area codes to which the Arborwood project is vested to in preparing your testimony?
I'm not entirely sure what you're asking. Would you mind asking that again?
Sure. Did you refer to the, did you review the critical area ordinance or the stormwater regulations that are governing this application in preparing your testimony?
Yes. And I have reviewed, what have I reviewed? I've reviewed a lot of the materials that are in, the foundational materials, the balance materials, and the applicant's materials. So a lot of the materials I've been through, I've not prepared a report on any of that. So I think actually what I spoke incorrectly. I definitely taking notes, but I don't have like a prepared testimony on any of this. But I have notes that I have prepared for, on various comments that I have on this whole piece. So it's not all just impromptu.
Let me re-ask the question that I asked earlier. Did you review the stormwater regulations or the critical area code that are applicable to this project in preparing those notes or any of your testimony?
I think I did. Yeah.
Just another question or two. Did you conduct a site visit to this property?
No.
Okay. And when were you contacted by the appellants regarding this case?
I don't recall exactly. Probably about 2 or 3 months ago. I don't remember exactly.
Last question. What issues do you tend to testify on?
I'm sorry, say again?
What issues do you intend to testify on in this appeal?
The impacts of stormwater management on the wetlands.
Okay. I have no objections, Ms. Marshall, to the extent that his testimony is limited to that scope of testimony.
Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Liao. Folks, I know I mentioned earlier that we would take a quick break at 3:30. I'm very watching Ms. Walston to make sure that we have a break at a time that, you know, so that they don't get backed up 2 hours. Would this be an appropriate time to take a 5-minute break before we get into more of the meat of Dr. Rosine's testimony?
Sure, that would work.
Okay.
Yeah, at least
5 minutes, if we can try to limit that, everyone.
May I ask a quick question? How long we intend to go today?
Well, I am at your disposal, but I don't know about Ms. Walston. I'm happy to keep going as long as the parties have coffee.
It's not going to help with the speed of my conversation.
I noticed this is scheduled at 5:45. We are absolutely planning to be here till then. I wasn't sure. We had an unusual start time, so I just wanted to see if we were right till at least then. So
yeah, well, I'm good until 5:45 or 6, or you know.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Great. Thank you.
So I'll let the clerk get caught up here, and we will return in 5 minutes at just a little bit before 3:25.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.